Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Silly Steel. I was just curious here. I just wanted to make sure everything was okay on my switchboard here. All right. Tonight I wanted to read a few more essays from my new book. Essays on metaphysics. I have, of course, this new book called Naked at the Mic, Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril, and the book is broken down into 16 chapters and 166 essays, and the essays are broken down into six categories, actually. They're national politics, international politics, patriotism, satire, mainstream media, and metaphysics. And since this is Thursday night, we tend to go with metaphysics. I've written a number of them. I know some of them I've already read. A few last week I read on the air. Some of the patriotic ones and a few others. But tonight I'd like to get into some of these. One of my great fears back in 2005, not quite as much today, but it's very, very frightening still, is the conservative reign on thought in this country, especially how they, schools and religion and government, and we have such a warped sense of conservatism, fear, doubt, greed, so many things that are associated with this conservative element that seems to be having taken over our system. And it looks like the Obama administration isn't really going to help us much here in these areas. In fact, they are, if anything, are trying to clamp down on the internet and freedom of speech and a number of areas that are quite frightening and leading into a totalitarian system. I thought we were under one under Bush. It was very frightening, but at least freedom of speech was available and out there, and I was, as one radio talk show host, and television host through that period of time, made a lot of noise and tried to stretch the boundaries of freedom of speech under a war period and under this time. And that's what this book was about as well, which was a defense of liberalism and freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom, and trying to understand over these years, and like I say, it's chronicled for 2000 to 2009, the latter part of 2009 when I finished the book. And this particular one starts the metaphysical essays, and it's called A Thought About Conservatives. All conservatives are such from personal defects. They have been effeminated by position or nature, born halt and blind, through luxury of their parents, and can only, like invalids, act on the defensive. That was by Ralph Waldo Emerson, essay Conservatives from Conduct of Life. It amazes me, what he must think, what he would think about today, and this is kind of what this article is about. On the grand design of nature and the divine order, Emerson is one of America's greatest thinkers and most respected writers. His relevance and concepts are absolutely timeless. One can only imagine what he would have to say about the conservative pundits and think tanks of today if he were alive and writing today, what the conservative media would be saying about him. I'm certain the majority of the members of the media have never read Emerson, just as they have read none of the writings of the great liberal thinkers of our American heritage, Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and so many others. Ignorance is bliss is the motto of most conservatives. They think that their parents, what their parents thought, or do not think at all. Or they think what they are told to think by their government, or priest, or preacher, or teacher, mainstream media, or political party, without inquiry or investigation into the origin of fact or fiction. They dread the pains of industry it takes to think for themselves. They prefer to parrot the cliches and actions of the damned generations, calling them great and noble, these generations of slavery and segregation, monopolies, world wars, massive poverty, and imperial tyranny, rather than listen, read, and cherish the wisdom of the true sages. Great sages combated the blindness, stupidity, and selfishness of dynasties and conservative governments and societies to bring about social reforms under free, liberal governments. The greatest horror facing America is the possibility of Emerson's works and the works of other great liberal thinkers becoming banned from schools and purged from the history of the American people. Conservative ignorance got Charles Darwin expelled from grade school science, while Thomas Jefferson is purged from American history classes. Ralph Waldo Emerson already has been expelled. Even the brilliant revolutionary works of Christ have been perverted and edited into the ignorant rants of evangelical cult leaders of the Christian right, who call their followers to a false heaven through the malevolent manipulation of fear and faith. Christ's teachings are with us because of courageous, far-thinking, open-minded people who preserved his works and recorded his teachings throughout the Roman persecutions of the early Christians and through the dark ages of barbarians who burned and plundered all civilizations and made slaves of the conquered people. The extreme conservatism we now face in America is this same barbarism, that same brutal force and ignorance that burns books, humiliates liberal ideals, and destroys all dignity in the advancement of mankind. Conservatives prefer to view the world and foreign ideas and cultures as their enemy, rather than open their closed minds to ideas of peace, compassion, and the goal of human perfection worthy of eternal reward, rather than eternal damnation. This I wrote in March of 2005, when they were actually banning books, and the conservatives were just going crazy. 2 months after Bush was re-inaugurated. I'm not sure. I should have looked up and seen which ones I've read. Some I've read, others have not. But regardless, there are a couple that I definitely would want to read again tonight. This is Altering World Reality. I wrote this on March 20th, 2005. I'd like to read that to you now. We have all heard or we have all seen or heard of some miracle or form of healing not considered possible by the medical or scientific communities. We have heard of people who can create masterful illusions that confound all senses. We have heard of shaman and medicine men or psychics or spiritualists who have communicated with the dead or healed the living by magical incantations. Mankind has always been susceptible to a hoax or a con. World governments and religions operate by their masterful illusions of godlike or militaristic supremacy. Their illusion is based on the false belief that those who follow them actually believe in the institutions and authority. Most follow for the sake of convenience and expediency. The power of these institutions is given to them by the passive collective beliefs and cynicisms of their followers. All spiritual and political leaders are master manipulators, showmen, or illusionists. Many years ago, I read a book by a man with only one name, Neville. He wrote and lectured during the 1960s and the 1970s. His writings and lectures were based upon the power of the imagination and how it alters the physical reality and can change the world as it changed his life and that of his many students who use his techniques and visualization. Neville's book was entitled The Promise. It took for one of its major premises the teachings of Christ, who said, "Knock and the door will open. Ask and you shall receive." Neville states that all prophets were not people who saw the future, but they saw visions of how they would like the future to be. They gave their followers a vision to embrace and a lofty ideal to center their existence upon for an individual and a society to achieve. Neville's book cites examples after example of his students and himself creating first in their minds a complete vision of what or who they wanted to happen or become. Within days or weeks after using the techniques of visualization, their physical lives were completely transformed by a miraculous healing, a sudden increase in great wealth, or a perfect relationship, friendship, or marriage. This process of visualization has been used and perfected by artists, athletes, and entrepreneurs for centuries. So many successful people have discovered that visualization of their goals is vital to their achievement of it. Visualization is the force and foundation of all the greatest achievements of mankind. If we can imagine it, we can have it. Many who are reading this article might be wondering if I have put these practices to use in my own life. The answer is yes. I have. Have I succeeded in achieving my goals and transforming physical reality? Yes, yes, yes. When I have applied the strict discipline needed to accomplish self-abandonment by my intense focus upon my desired vision, remarkable results occurred. I will admit that I have failed to achieve immediate results in some of my visions, but I continued my visualizations for several months until the goal was achieved. But as a toothless child cannot chew a large steak, so is the person that cannot fully visualize their great success. We can only achieve what we are to fully conceive. When we first visualize our desires, we encounter many self-doubts. And we must keep in mind the desires of others and that their imaginings of us may, if we do not recognize them, be interfering with our vision of what we want to achieve and what we believe of ourselves. If a person can successfully visualize his desire, could that desire be injurious to someone else or to you? Perhaps that other person wants your job, your wife, your wealth, your life. Unless you have your own powerful vision of what you want to create, then you are doomed to become part of someone else's vision. If we do not have a vision of ourselves as we want ourselves to be, then someone else will create us the way they want us in their own vision. Remember that nature cannot tolerate a vacuum. Disciplines of auto-suggestion, focus, and wise use of imagination equate to the high art of visualization, which will transform one's desire into reality. The old adage of beware what you wish for, it might come true, was first stated by someone who understood the effects of visualization. We unconsciously create our own reality every day by the positive or negative thoughts we project. The imagination can create war and conflict just as it can create peace and harmony. If the majority of the consciousness of the people from all over the world could be directed to the visions of doom and gloom, prophets, why can't their collective consciousness be revised by a new utopian vision where all men and women cooperate fully with each other to ensure a seamless reality where universal freedom, peace, and love are the eternally indestructible walls which will protect and defend human civilization? It is all only a thought away from the vision to become reality, Gandhi said. You must become the change you wish to see in the world. That's altering world reality. This I wrote, this was a prayer. I had actually thought of putting it in my satirical part, segment, but I felt it was better positioned in the metaphysical aspect of where I'm going, because it's a prayer for Bush. Prayer to God. Rap, rap, rapping, rap, rap, rapturing at my door. This was September 7th of 2005, I wrote this. Yes, please, dear God, take all the Bush family to heaven in a twinkling of an eye. Take the blessed Bush administration straight to their just reward. God, if they are truly deserving of heaven, please leave me here. I do not wish to be in the same world as they. Any world, celestial or otherwise, with Bush and his minions in it. I beg of you, Lord, I plead with you, God, do not send me there. May God take his chosen rapturers and leave the earth to the meek as Christ promised. May God take these horrid human specimens and turn them into instant dust, never again to harm the world. Take them with them all the malevolent evangelists and pedophilic priests. Take the Pope and all of his Vatican cardinals, bishops, and devout illuminati. Rapture them, great God of mercy and compassion, and leave the world to those they have so harmed. God grant peace and the earth to those who have not the wealth or health or opportunity to survive under the hatred and contempt of a world ruled by demons and led by G.W. Bush. Rapture G.W. et al. Into your deepest, darkest vaults for eternity. Take them into the hellfires of eternal damnation. Leave the world, wonderful world of your creation, to the meek, the humble, the gentle, and the loving people who would steward the earth and return it to its state of Eden. Do G.W. and his minions realize that if the rapture does happen, it can only happen according to the Bible during the reign of the Antichrist? Is George saying by his belief in the immediate rapture that he is the Antichrist and his followers are demons here to bring about the end times? It is possible. It would make sense if one looked at G.W. Bush in that light. Maybe he's right. Maybe we are in the end times. I mean, he would know if he were the Antichrist, wouldn't he? But what if he just thinks he's the Antichrist? He's really just a fucking little pissant psychopath who stole the U.S. elections and whose daddy paid off or threatened the Supreme Court and Congress, who fucked over the American people and G.W. and now thinks he can fuck over the entire world. I don't think Mr. G.W. Bush is competent or intelligent enough to be an Antichrist. Or do I think anyone in his administration is competent enough to be working for a master planner like Satan? I mean, hell, would the ruler of the world, the big evil one, want to be known as the biggest fucking idiot in the world? I think the big bad guy deserves a little more credit than that. If I were Satan, I would want the world to fear me. I would want the world to do as I say and do it without question. And Satan would be smart enough to embody somebody who could demand respect, and you would think had a little charisma. After all, we are talking about the Prince of Darkness himself. The last guy he would want to look like or talk like or act like is G.W. Bush. Sorry, G.W., you just don't fit the bill. You make a great comic Halloween mask, kind of chimpish-looking, scrawny with big ears and a stupid grin, but you don't really scare anybody, and you absolutely do not command anyone's respect. So give up the big act and go back to your Bush farmer in Crawford and stay the hell out of government, because if you don't, the American people will make certain that you are raptured on the cross of world opinion, and you and that you are scourged by the contempt of the millions who hate you. Yes, O great deliverer of mass destruction, let the world witness your great rapture of anguish, pain, and ultimate humiliation, and hear your pathetic cries to your father, Daddy Bush, and your mother, Babs, as the world curses your name and the name of Bush for eternity. Humanity may pray for that day of rapture that will take GW and all of his born-again pals with him. I pray that God takes him very soon, before he can do any more harm to this world by his absolute stupidity. I learned this form of prayer by listening to one of America's favorite TV evangelists, Pat Robertson. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I hope he finds his way. Anyway. There is another section here that I wanted to, several other essays that are a little longer that I wanted to read tonight. One is the population reduction in Global 2000. I wrote this in January 29th, 2006. Shortly after I discovered the Global 2000 report that was referred to me, and I looked it up in Google, and there it was, a report that was signed off by started by Jimmy Carter and signed off by Ronald Reagan in 81. Took 5 years or so to prepare, and by Z. Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger, and to name a few. But it was about the depopulation of the world by the year 2000, and there were specific goals for the millennium. For the new millennium, for the 21st century, of global population reduction that should be achieved by 2020 and again by 2050, and new goals by 2070. pretty interesting, actually, 2050. So I'm going to read this and what I discovered. And the reason I put it into a metaphysical essay section is because if anything deals with the spirit of man and the malevolence, the level of evil that exists in our governments, that their desire is to destroy their own population by hundreds of millions of people and billions of people around the world. And this is discovered, this is out there, and also carried over by the UN policy on Agenda 21. And we understand now that there is a international plan of human depopulation globally, and to reduce the world population substantially within the matter of a few more years. Now begin. It is frightening and harsh truth. It is a frightening and harsh truth that I have discovered recently. I know I should have known about this long before now, but I ignored the report out of fear for what it stated. I ignored the words because I could not comprehend what they meant. I ignored all human suffering but my own. It will not go away, I thought, or it will go away, I thought, just as a cut or a bruise or cold will go away. But truth of population reduction will not go away. Only people will disappear. only the planet that we know will disappear unless we do something about planned population reduction. The first thing to do is to be aware of it. The Millennium Institute created a report entitled Global 2000, completed and published in 1981. This report was commissioned by the Carter administration and completed during the Reagan presidency. What is shown as present and historic fact was then used to predict future effect of the growth of human population reduction. What it predicted was that at the current rate of human population growth, the world could not sustain any more than 4 billion people. The planet human population today is approximately 6 billion people. The effect of this overpopulation accounts for past, present, and future government strategies surrounding global natural resources such as oil, natural gas, lumber, valuable materials, coal, and water and farming lands. The Global 2000 report shows that peak oil production has already begun, and by the year 2070, all known world oil reserves will be depleted. It shows that by 2070, at the current rate of the human population, 12 billion people will be living on planet Earth. If this is allowed to happen unchecked, then governments will no longer be able to govern effectively, and more wars will break out. More revolutions, more bloodshed, more religious and secular arguments, and eventually global war. Widespread famine and disease will become the common cause of death for billions of people around the world. The first to die are those who are already dying by the millions in the third world countries of the southern hemispheres. The stories of genocide we hear from so many countries are real global weather modification by those governments of the northern hemisphere are being deliberately carried out, who desperately need the natural and enslaved human resources of these exploited countries. War and political unrest are simple diversions for the true motives of globalist leaders: to capture the wealth and control all world regions that control natural resources by reducing populations by war, contaminated vaccines, privatization of all resources, water, land, minerals, and are enslaving the indigenous people of these countries by creating and maintaining enormous barriers to prevent education and economic independence. Genocide is not restricted to third world countries. It is prevalent in all industrialized countries as well. The indiscriminate testing of bioweapons on unsuspecting citizens, the contamination of water and food supplies with known toxins and chemicals such as mercury, pesticides, and known carcinogens is well reported and well known. Yet little is being done to protect us. Our complicit governments are well aware of these experiments and mass murders being carried out, but are not speaking out to warn or protect the people they are supposed to represent. This blame and shame doesn't suggest belong to the U.S. government, but to all industrialized governments, because they are all aware of the problem they would face if too many people remained alive. So, I'm taking a second here, but you can see where it's leading up to. The AIDS pandemic began in 1980. And was suspected then of being caused by the artificial creation of the virus spread by the U.S. government into the gay communities to eliminate their populations and then to depopulate as many areas of the globe as possible to comply with the global population reduction goals set by the industrialized countries. The estimated goal for population reduction globally was to reduce the population to 4 billion, which would require the extermination of 2 billion people by the year 2000. Even with all the wars and plagues up until the present day, the population remains at approximately 6 billion, and this number must be reduced to 4 billion to sustain the eco-balance of human population to global resources. In the 21st century, it is predicted that all wars will be fought over limited resources of water and oil and other precious resources. We are seeing that prediction coming true when we simply observe the many wars now being fought around the world. Most are caused by land disagreements and ancient hatreds between cultures, caused by previous genocides carried out by both warring parties, and inflamed by their mutual distrust of each other. The most difficult decision, of course, once intelligent and rational people are made aware of this existing ruthless and calculated program of global population reduction, is that of who will be sacrificed. Who will be deliberately massacred, starved, or killed by man-made diseases and disasters so that others can live? Is it now the survival of the fittest, social Darwinism? Will we begin to see the disappearance of certain minorities, blacks, Asians, Hispanics, and Caucasians? Perhaps religious factions, Muslims, Christians, Jews, Buddhists. They will all be, they all being attacked from within their own countries and from outside, and most of these religion hierarchies have ordered the persecution of others, as many of their own followers have also been persecuted. This form of ethnic or cultural cleansing and genocide has been practiced and condoned by human society since man's creation. It is simply a side of mankind that is enlightened, that its enlightened members prefer to ignore, unless they themselves are faced with persecution and the threat of death or enslavement. Then it becomes an issue of self-defense. Dog eat dog, every man for himself, or organized resistance. Within everyone is the desire to live. It is just that some are better, far better at survival than others, and are more aware of the survival skills needed to remain strong, healthy, and aware of the existence of potential predators. So the great question is, who will be destroyed first? The answer is the weakest. Who will be second, third, and fourth? They will all be the weakest and most vulnerable. Then it will come down to the survival of the most cunning and the strong. Not so much the most populated or the richest, but the cleverest, the most physically healthy, the most aggressive, the most adaptable, protective, and the most ruthless. Frightening choices, frightening consequences, but it is real and present, and vicious massacres are being carried out now and have been since the beginning of human existence. It appears that mankind's prolific ability to reproduce has outpaced his natural predators, until finally the world's deadliest predator is threatening to destroy vast numbers of the global human population for sake of its own survival, and that predator is mankind itself. Will love, compassion, mercy, wisdom, prayer all help to bring about a divine solution? The last divine solution was the worldwide flood. The next foretold divine solution is again the final destruction of mankind, but not by flood again. Maybe there is a better solution, but world leaders have not found it yet. No one has found it yet, unless it is faith. If faith in divine intervention saves the planet, that will be wonderful. But if it does not, then evolution will take its normal course in creating a more viable human species, or eventually bring about the extinction of mankind. So that was, I suggest that that was Population Reduction in Global 2000. I suggest you look up the Global 2000 report at, by Google Lab. Get a better, possibly get a better definition or the entire report, which is what I saw. My next essay is called The Misanthropy of the American Christian Right. I'll repeat that. The Misanthropy of the American Christian Right. I wrote this back in May 4th, actually, 2005. Each one of these essays is dated, by the way, next to the title, to give it a historical perspective as well as you know, just a journalistic perspective. I'll begin. Never throughout my lifetime can I recall when in America such a group of perverted, mind-altered psychopaths have ever gained greater influence and control of the American government, as has the Christian right. As a former Christian, having been absorbed since birth in Catholicism and later Protestantism, I finally realized by the time I was 21 that I could not accept either religious concept. As a former Christian, I have disowned myself from any and all practice of Catholics and Protestants. Not that the Christ figure isn't an admirable example of moral human contact or conduct, but isn't it just too convenient for a Roman emperor to adopt the religious philosophy of pacifism for his countrymen while he retained his own brutal pagan beliefs? Christianity was the perfect assertion of passivity as opposed to Roman polytheism, which encouraged the Romans to brutalize and militarily conquer and control the entire known world and crucify the founder and early leaders of the Christian religion. 300 years after the death of Christ and countless Christian martyrs, the Emperor Constantine recognized the growing power of the idealism of Christians as they had been slaughtered in martyrdom by the thousands for the amusement of the bloodthirsty Roman crowds at the Circus Maximus. He must have marveled at the mindset that made Christian people so passive and pathetically weak, as one could only expect would be the perception of a Roman empire. The teachings of Christ, as I have digested them over the many years, seem hardly to be radical from a present perspective, unless the simple act of human compassion and a concern for one's fellow human being is considered radical. Christ merely gave simple hope to the poor and wretched people of his time. He told them that life was simply a way station that all must pass through to the eternal journey of the Spirit. And Christ gave hope to the hopeless and healing to the sick. He was a man of compassion, yet was considered a threat and a heretic to those of his own Judaic faith. Misanthropy is a prevailing evil throughout American society, but never has it been more obvious and more destructive than in the contrarian hands of the American Christian right. This lunatic fringe of American society is preyed upon and manipulated by insidious evangelists, preachers, and priests, predatory politicians, and every patriotic promoter of militaristic nationalism and the better and stronger than any one American spirit. People of the far right are the most vulnerable, most disenfranchised members of American society. So many are poorly educated and cannot or will not think for themselves. They have been conditioned for their entire lives to be good Baptists or Methodists or Catholics or Republicans or Democrats. The concepts and politics of global humanitarianism mingled with modern science, art, and truthful revelations brought about by modern communications and global networks has torn away all the veils of religious and political deception that so well conceal the truth with historical fallacies and fear. Members of the American Christian right are bred with fear of punishment and damnation and intolerance. This is what creates their hatred, their need of a personal savior for their confused condition, and someone like themselves who will love them regardless of their moral faults. Praise the Lord, and he will forgive all your sins. Look down on the wicked. You are the sons and daughters of God, so you can do no wrong on this earth. They believe this, and they flock to their Sunday services and pray for G.W. Bush to guide them. These helpless and hapless members of the American society are isolated by their growing degrees of anger, desperation, isolation, ignorance, and total indoctrination of consumer nationalism by their schools and media, their priests and ministers, teachers and trusted friends all encourage their flawed self-righteousness and chauvinistic pride. How easy it is to persuade these Americans to follow any leader who promises them something better for themselves and their children, by claiming easy, simple solutions to major problems explained to them in simple sound bites, such as war, money, lack of money, evil, bad, and demonizing other words such as liberal, left, secular humanism, environmentalist. Fundamentalist Christian leaders like G.W. Bush serve their followers by lying to these simple believers and stealing all they have and threatening their future generations with war, taxes, poverty, and pollution. An abused child or spouse often develops the belief that the abuser imposes upon them and accepts the abuse as part of their lives and their pain and confusion as their fate that they must stoically tolerate, embrace, defend, exalt, emulate, and believe their beliefs can only be changed by their Christian God. Their lives are to be considered blessed and better than anyone else in the world because G.W. Bush says it is, and all of his friends are rich. And he says, if we believe in his leadership, we will all be like him. This is the American myth, embedded in the minds of the Christian right and conservative Republicans. Unless they are stopped, our nation and many others will be inevitably ruined by their apocalyptic prophecy. As their apocalyptic prophecy becomes self-fulfilling. And it's still that way, and I still believe it. Nobody is more deluded than the far-left liberal and the far-right conservative. I mean, totally, totally deluded. Into totally indoctrinated into these almost religious factions. The global warmists, global alarmists, eugenicists, the far left has these grand ideals of a socialistic, totalitarian government, which I fear is Obama's group. Quite frightening, actually. So, from that perspective, that's why I wrote that article. And of course, being under the Bush regime at the time in 2005 was quite disturbing to see the effects of the Christian right. My next article is a little longer than the others, not too much longer, but it's called War Against Islam is War Against Ourselves. And, it's self-explanatory. I wrote this on December 6, 2006. I have heard many statements made about the followers of Islam from the media and from other ignorant or propaganda-filled sources. I have heard these same disturbing statements made about people of different races, people of different languages, different sizes and weights and income status. We are, as the human species, so full of hate and rage fueled by groveling ignorance that we cannot raise our heads out of the excrement of our own base selves. Are we so lowly a species that we compare with the most predatory creatures? These creatures operate on instinct and act or react for territorial self-preservation. If animals know hatred, is because man has taught it to them. In my recent research of Islamic culture, I have been trying to identify the main themes and comparisons between Western and Middle Eastern cultures and formulate an understanding of both so I can convey the findings to my audiences. The rise of hatred and war amongst these opposing societies and cultures warrant serious questioning on behalf of the thinking members of those societies as to what is fueling the conflict. I will not give any note of specific recognition as to where I have seen these images I am about to mention, other than that they are attributed to pro-Israel and pro-Christian websites. I have seen them, and I was reviled and disgusted by them. Many of these images were degrading images of Jesus and Muhammad. These images were from medieval and modern artists that defiled both prophets in the most vile and contemptible depictions. Many of these pictures and comments were from famous museums, manuscripts, and mainstream European and American publications. These soulless promoters of human profane renditions, of highly profane renditions of the world's greatest prophets, convinced me of the depravity of men and women throughout the centuries. This depravity is fueled to a great degree by our own spiritual and political leaders. For me to be shocked by the depravity of humanity as a man of my age and experience is rather a rare occurrence. However, in recent years, with the advent of the Iraq War and the atrocities of the Israeli Zionist occupation and war with Palestine and Lebanon, and the publicized revelations of the heinous deaths and torture conducted by both cultures against one another, I can state with confidence that very little else can shock me. In the Quran, it states that both Jesus and Muhammad will sit in judgment of the world in the end times. The Mahdi of Islamic prophecy is the perfect spiritual man who will come to raise Islam in the final days. In Christianity, it is Jesus who will return to the earth to rule. Each prophecy resembles the other. Even the physical description of the Mahdi states that he will resemble Jesus and be of the Arabic race. I have not found clarity yet for a compromise between both faiths, other than both religions, both prophets were messengers to humanity from the same God. And both prophets credit the Father, the one God, the God of Abraham and Isaac. Both prophets claim their God to be the same God of the Jews. What Islam does is condemn the Jews and Christians for their hypocrisy, as well as their unwarranted aggression against Islamic people. The power and message of condemnation is granted to them based upon the message Muhammad received from God's messenger, the angel Gabriel, the same angel who visited Mary, the mother of Jesus, and told her she would give birth to the Messiah. The Quran recognizes Mary as the mother of Jesus, the Messiah, and the chosen apostle of God, but it also claims Muhammad as the last prophet of the same God. Who am I, or who is anyone, to deny that Muhammad was a prophet? Who is anyone to deny Jesus as a prophet? More than half of the world's population believes in one or the other men as being prophets. What most fail to understand is that both prophets claim their divine messages from the same God. There is no difference between them, except 600 years of cultural changes, 600 years of corrupted Christian and pagan values conceived and revised under Roman domination and coerced upon the known civilization by the Church of Rome. Is it too difficult to imagine what God might that I'm sorry. Is it too difficult to imagine that God might have been disappointed with the political aspirations, corruption, and incompetence of the early church leaders? According to the Quran, God was disappointed enough with man that he sent the angel Gabriel to speak to Muhammad, another prophet, to try and straighten out the mess that was created. Gabriel instructed Muhammad to accept the message of Jesus and spread the teachings, and created new laws for the people of the desert regions and to spread the truth about the world to the world. Christianity, as the world knows, it was greatly inspired by the works of Paul of Tarsus. Why do Christian believers believe so devoutly in Paul's conversion experience and not believe that Muhammad had a similar experience? How can they believe that Gabriel visited Mary and not believe that he could not have visited Muhammad 600 years later? The same factual empirical evidence of either visitation is the same. Neither had witnesses, both instances were self-proclaimed. They later believed by family members and followers. To deny one or the other is based solely on the politics and propaganda of political and religious leaders of the time. This new rise of jihad is inflamed by the insane foreign policies of the Bush administration and the global interest he is fronting for. The hatred of the Christians, Jews, and Muslims is created by the imperial aggression of the leaders of the Western countries allied with Israel to plunder the oil wealth of the Middle East. This is obvious, except to the most ignorant and blind. It must be understood that actions of Muhammad must be placed in the context of the times he lived in and the region of the world. This was a war-filled world with conquering tribes and organized bands of lawless marauders that pillaged villages and settlements and terrorized populations. Peace came from military victory and brutal enforcement of regional laws. It was the same in Europe during the Dark Ages. These were feudal times when paganism and polytheism still flourished throughout the world. Monotheism was a new concept, a new idea that had begun to capture mankind's imagination with grand concepts of compassion, mercy, love, forgiveness of one's enemies, love for one's neighbors, heaven and earth, and the end of man's suffering or an eternity of suffering. These were great and new concepts that swept through the world on the words of the prophets. Grand visions and ideologies communicated to men and women without the aid of computers or telecommunications, without the combustion engine or steam power, the limited written communications. All was transmitted verbally from teacher to student, from apostle to priest, from priest and political leaders to the general public. It is miraculous that the words and visions of Jesus and Muhammad have survived 2 millennia. The possibility that deliberate or innocent misinterpretation is derived from poor mistranslations of the words of prophets might have skewed some of them true message is highly probable. In fact, it's highly improbable that the perfect message of God as it was given to his prophets hasn't been garbled in translations and used as it is today for political manipulation of the masses. Many skeptics believe that religions were designed by the ruling elite for population control, used to incite populations to enter into war or create fear of the afterlife, so their subjects willingly pay tithing to the king or government-controlled church. We cannot underestimate the powers of the ruling elite in any society to pursue covetously any means of controlling their societies or gaining control of more people and more resources to enrich their societies. This has to be understood for anyone to grasp the complexities of our most recent struggles between cultures. The use of religious and racial hatred to inspire people to war is an ancient and extremely effective tool used by rulers since the first generations civilizations. It creates a false belief that one race or another or one religion is superior to another, manipulating the words of the prophets to confuse and control the masses of devout believers. The Christian leaders are as guilty of using this tactic as are the Muslims, as are any religious leaders in the world, past or present. The only way that an individual can ever discern or identify the meaning of God's message is by true and honest reflection of God's message as it is spoken directly to us. We cannot fully trust that the words of the prophets of any faith have been accurately translated and passed down from generation to generation without either some minor or major alteration. Just as every constitutional government has had to amend its constitution to include or clarify a certain issue that could not have been imagined by its original writers, and definitely not comprehended by those it was meant to govern, how could any mortal man or woman have seen 2,000 years ahead into the future and described their vision effectively to their own generation, and hope it is cherished and preserved by the countless generations of the future? Yes, I believe that these immortal words of the Christian and Islamic holy books were divinely inspired. I believe that the courage and faith of those who spread and preserved the words of the prophets were divinely inspired, evidenced by their suffering and dying for their beliefs. But the martyrs of Islam, must the martyrs of Islam be considered any less courageous or less devout than the martyrs of Christianity? Who judges these people? Who gives their lives for their faith in God and their faith in the eternal salvation and earthly betterment of mankind shed their blood, sacrifice their families, and willingly die agonizing deaths for their belief in the same God. It is the discord caused by the deceptions or ignorance of spiritual and political leaders that inflame humanity against itself and condemns the message of prophets. As I study and compare the Islamic religion and culture with my own, I find myself being drawn to a conclusion. That conclusion is the finite definition of my own faith. To believe in either Jesus or Muhammad, Moses or Buddha, or many other divinely inspired men and women of greatest faith depends solely upon the individual. God's endless diversity can be understood more clearly simply by looking at our own surroundings. We have created our surroundings through the graces of God and His gift of nature. His laws given to us by His prophets state that if an individual's faith derived from his own evidence of the one true God, then he or she is indistinguishable from any of the prophets. He or she have love and compassion for their fellow man. The prophets have taught us that we inherently know. Mankind must consider itself a marvelous and mysterious creation and must have a collective and unified faith in the compassionate omnipotence of the one true God if we hope to continue to exist. I will leave you with that. Actually, I think I'll leave you with this. Kind of a silly one, but it's a... I don't know if I read this before or not, but I may have. A liberal's victory of faith against fear. This is written the day after Obama was elected, November 5th, 2008. I am very happy today. It is a great day. One of those days that I feel a part of creating a new American and world history. I know many people who are not very happy today because Barack Obama won the presidency last night. But that isn't my problem today. Today I feel good. Today I feel hopeful, optimistic, and every other positive adjective that describes happiness. I am happy because the presidential race is over. I'm happy because I feel a great justice has been served by the American people. I feel happy because the intent of my vote for Barack Obama was honest, undiluted, and completely emotionally inspired. I, like 64% of voting Americans, made a choice yesterday for the future of the United States. My voice was passed on faith that Barack Obama should win the presidency. I was becoming a very cynical radio talk show host who had little faith in the American election process and was losing faith in my fellow citizens that were not seeing what was happening to their country. But last night's confirmation of Barack Obama's victory gave me a jolt of hope, inspiration, and pride like I had never received before from casting my vote in this great republic. Faith is a great power, great promise, great inspiration. I believe that Americans have faith in a great future. I believe we can repair the horrible damage that was caused by 8 years of worst leadership this country has ever had to bear. I believe we can repair our national reputation around the world. I believe we will rid our country of all hopelessness and despair. I believe we will withdraw our troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. I believe we will restore our national economy to the strongest in the world. I believe we will cull the criminal and cowardly elements from our government and bring all traitors and criminals to justice. I believe we will repair the division of the right and left factions in this country. I believe we will see a renaissance of liberalism in this country that will inspire American ingenuity, industry, and art to heights never before imagined by mankind. Fear motivated the McCain voters. The fear of losing their power, fear of responsibility, fear of shedding their ignorance, fear of ridding their demons of hatred and bigotry, fear of sharing their nation's wealth with their fellow Americans, fear of minority reprisals, fear of their own criminal acts and intentions being exposed, fear of their traditions of ignorance and inferiority being changed to enlightenment and the great self-esteem. Fear of being wrong, fear of having faith in the best of mankind, fear of having faith in God and America, fear of no longer having fear. The election of Barack Obama to the presidency of the United States proved to me that all is still and will be well with this country. It proved to me that the strength and determination of liberal Americans are now unified and will soon be solidified into the greatest and most determined people on the planet, ready to forge ahead in the direction of a remarkable and bountiful future, regardless of who is their president. But as my readers know by now, I am a hopeful idealist. And with that, I'll end tonight's program. I ran just a little bit over, but I hope we're still broadcasting. Thank you. And that's the last show this week. Join us again next week on Wednesday night, or if you can't wait, join us on WQQQ.com on Tuesday night between 8 and 10. Hope to see you then. Talk to you later, and good night.